Hello, welcome to another Sam and Steve podcast. My name's Steve.
And my name's Sam.
So if this is your first time here, welcome. This is a podcast about wedding photography and about weddings and all those things scrambled together. And I never get that right, do I?
No.
You get the idea. So we're wedding photographers based in Bicester in Oxfordshire. And sometimes we talk about photography, sometimes we talk about weddings, sometimes we talk about both, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, is that all you got to say? Yeah.
Yeah.
So how are you, Samantha?
I'm okay.
Good. Good, good.
We've started getting back into wedding season.
Going to say we've started wedding season, haven't we? We've done two so far.
Got another one tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We're at the Voco at the Oxford Thames Voco in Sanford-upon-Thames.
Sanford-upon-Thames, yeah.
We're preferred suppliers there, aren't we?
Yeah. We like going there.
Yeah, always a nice place to do.
Especially when they have a party boat going past as we're trying to take photos, as we've had a few times in the past.
Well, later on this year, we've got a wedding where we'll actually be on the party boat.
I know.
Well, I might be, you might be.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, but that's a bit different than punting.
No, it was also that as well. We've got a punting as well.
I know we're punting. No, you're punting.
No.
I'm not.
Just to be clear, dear listener, I'm actually going to be doing the punting. I'll be on the boat with the bride and groom while somebody else does the punting. The joys of being an Oxford wedding photographer. We get to have all these fun things on rivers.
It's normally quite good fun, though, isn't it? Because the company, where they're punting to, normally supply the boat and they supply somebody to actually do the punting. So the couple get on and have a basket with champagne and strawberries or whatever else they decide to have, and then you take photos.
Yeah, especially when we go into the Cheerwell Boathouse, which is what we're doing in September, I think.
Did you have to do those funny noises?
Probably not, no. I just trying to remember. They tend to merge into one, I'm afraid. So apologies, dear listener, if you were photographing your wedding this year. We do know what we're doing, honest, but we do rely on our Studio Ninja CRM package that reminds us where we're going to be any moment in time. So I know what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of weeks, but ask me in September. Probably don't know off the top of my head.
Well, when you've got 30, 40 weddings every year, then it's not really that it's not a surprise, is it?
Not really. So anyway, we have a special guest interview coming up soon. We have Richard Parsons, who's a magician. I think it's the first time we have a magician ever on the show. And I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, a couple of days ago even.
It wasn't a couple of weeks ago.
No, a couple of days ago. He's known as the Gloucestershire Magician, and it was fascinating talking to him. And that will be coming up in about 10 minutes. But we should say where we met him, actually.
At the Guides for Brides Customer Service Awards.
Yes, which were a couple of weeks ago at the Town Hall in Oxford. And we didn't win, did we?
Yeah, but there were about 15 photographers in the group.
We were in the finalists again. So 7 years running that we were finalists. So thank you everybody that reviewed us and voted for us and recommended us. We do really appreciate it.
We do. Yes.
And we didn't quite get to the first prize this time, but we were also the event photographers, weren't we?
Yeah, that was kind of. It was nice. We had a few issues.
We'll come on to that in a minute. So it was probably the biggest ever awards do that they've had, actually, at Guides for Brides. I think, did John say there was 190 guests?
Yeah, they were quite surprised at how many people were there this year, weren't they? Yeah. It's the biggest event they've run so far.
And lots of categories. So there's obviously the obvious ones like wedding dress shops and gentleman's outfit shops and videographers and photographers. But there must have been about 15 different venue categories.
There were a few, yeah.
Like barn weddings, venue, hotel venue, venues with R in the name.
No, there were large venues, weren't there? I can't remember all the categories, but it got quite confusing. But there were lots of different categories.
Yeah, and it did seem like they were almost making them up as they went along, really. No, that's not fair. But there were lots and lots of venue categories, should we say. And obviously the florists and the cake makers and all those. And we saw lots of people we know, of course.
Yeah, which is always nice.
And it was nice just to be on the other side for a change. So we were there, obviously, as potential award winners, but we were there as the event photographers as well. So we did our normal sort of stuff that we do at weddings. We mingled amongst people.
Did rather a lot of networking.
A lot of networking. Yeah. Well, that's great though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is good.
And then whilst they were having their dinner, we had our dinner. And Richard, who we're going to come on to, did a bit of magic for all the guests as well. And then we came to the awards do, which we worked in tandem.
We did. So you were up on stage actually photographing people get their awards, and then I was down where they'd got a backdrop photographing the team and them after they've received their award. Sorry,
that was just Samantha. Samantha hitting a mic stand there, by the way, because she can't help talking with her hands. And giving me a rude gesture then as well. Yeah, so I did the presentation photo, and you got, as people came off the stage and went to the backdrop, as you did, as you said, the Guides to Bride backdrop, you photographed people with their trophy.
Yes.
And it was a lot of fun, actually. We enjoy doing events. So if you're an event organiser and you want event photographers, we're your people. But there was a challenge at the end. So the guys from Guides to Brides wanted a group photo of all of the winners and nominated.
So basically everybody there?
Not quite everybody, but most people.
Almost.
Yeah. It was probably a group photo of at least 100 people in Oxford Town Hall. Anyway, a lot of people. And if you know Oxford Town Hall, it's a beautiful building, but it's got quite a high ceiling and the stage area, and there's no way we could get everybody up on the stage. So.
It wasn't a very big stage, was it? Particularly to have that many people on. And you'd probably, because you have to have three or four rows of people, if they're on stage, you're not going to see the people at the front, at the back. And if they're on the ground floor, then you can't see the people at the back either. So it was a big challenge, really.
Yeah, and
so it was kind of two or three rows on stage or on the ground floor, wasn't it?
And even though I got my big boy flash gun, there's no way I could light everybody. So it was a lot of available light as well. So it was quite a challenge to get it afterwards. But I did do the wedding photographer's trick of standing on a chair so I could get high up.
That was a disaster.
It was a disaster, yes. So I'm standing on this chair and... you know, apologies to Oxford Town Hall for any damage, of course. But I was standing on this chair trying to photograph all these 100-odd people for this big group. And then all of a sudden the chair gave way from underneath me and I went A over T.
Didn't end very well.
Well, it could have ended worse. So,
but it didn't end very well.
So I ended up in a crumpled heap and I...
I've never seen you get up so quick.
You never seen me play football. I immediately looked down at my Sony camera and my shiny new lens and thought, oh dear, or words to that effect.
Panic.
But thankfully they weren't broken, but I did snap off my Godox flash gun. So the flash gun was completely snapped off at the hot shoe mount. And lots of people came up to me and said, are you all right? Are you all right? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, I can cope with this. I'm not, yeah. And I'm thinking, oh dear.
No, you were thinking a bit stronger than that.
Yeah, but we don't make this podcast explicit, so we're not going to use naughty words, are we, Samantha? Are we? We're not going to use naughty words, no?
Yes, dear.
So I completely recovered my composure very quickly and took lots of great photos, of course, as you'd expect, with a broken flash gun. No, I borrowed your flash gun, the other flash gun we had, the other Godox.
And then I broke it later.
And then you broke it later as well. So you're on the dance floor as people are partying away. And there's a few, let's say, slightly inebriated people.
That's an understatement.
And one backed into you and snapped off your flash gun as well.
She was staggering around and she staggered backwards and literally fell into me and then looked at me and carried on staggering around and didn't even realise what she'd done.
Yeah, I told her and she sort of looked at me and said, so what? So we'd gone from a situation for being potentially award-winning photographers to being about £400 worse off because of two busted flash guns. But what I found out next day, actually, and I'm sure all the photographers listening to this know that, but if you use the Godox flash gun system, you can actually unscrew those useless plastic Sony hot shoes they have on them, hot shoe connectors, and replace them with decent metal ones. And you can buy those connections.
Because they've had this problem so often in the past that they've had to improve the design of them.
They have. And you can buy the hot shoe mount on Amazon for about £15 each. And all you have to do is unscrew four screws, put a little ribbon cable in, and Bob's your uncle.
Fanny's your aunt.
Possibly. We had shiny new flash guns as if nothing had happened, really. So it wasn't quite the disaster I thought it was going to be. But in all seriousness, it was a lot of fun photographing it. Nice to be on the other side of the awards for change. And congratulations to all the awards winners. I don't have a list of all the awards winners to hand, but if you want to know who won what award, just go to the Guides for Brides website and you'll find out all the award winners, won't you?
You will.
We should say, actually, though, a big congratulations to our friend Gitano, who's a brilliant wedding videographer, who was the award-winning wedding videographer on the night. And it was great to see him because he's a good mate of ours. And it was great to see him achieve. So well done, buddy. That was a great, great, highly deserved award.
And Luciano.
Yeah, Luciano suits. Yeah, gentlemen's suits, Italian suits. Yeah, great, great job. But as I say, we can't go into all of them because there were lots and lots of award winners. And as I say, working on that night as well as us was a guy that we met for the first time called Richard Parsons. And Richard is a magician based in Gloucester. And he was working on the evening doing magic tricks for people arriving at the event. But he also compared with John Madiford of Guide to Brides. He compared their raffle prizes and did a really good job. And afterwards, I said to him, how would you fancy being on our podcast? And he said, I'd love to do so. So there we go. A couple of days ago, I spoke to him, found out about all the world of being a magician, and that interview is coming up right now. Hey, Richard, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me. Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. So we met recently at the Guides for Brides Awards ceremony where we were both working. You were obviously the magician on the day, and Sam and I were the wedding photographers, and it was great to get to meet you there. And we had the idea of having you on the podcast. So we've never had a magician on before, so it's really great to have you here and find out a bit more about what a magician does and why a couple should book a magician at a wedding, really. So perhaps just start a little bit with, really, you know, why did you become a magician? How did you become a magician?
So it was kind of by accident, really. So my previous career, I was actually a therapist.
Oh, wow.
I specialised in hypnotherapy and had a practice in Cheltenham.
Wow.
And it was actually at a therapy conference that a friend of mine did some card tricks for me. This was way back in about 2005, 2006, I think, and really just got me hooked on magic. Because this was our annual therapy conference, like a big black tie dinner.
Sure.
I didn't even know he did card tricks. And he did some card tricks on me, and he very kindly actually sent me a book and some decks of cards, which really got me hooked because he could see that I was quite serious about wanting to try.
Wow.
Learning some card magic and close-up magic. And it came full circle in the end because this guy, Mark Vasey, actually ended up coming along to watch my audition for the Magic Circle, which was really nice. So, this guy, without really knowing it, sort of kick-started a whole new career. So what happened over a few years was my magic business got busier and busier and busier with more and more events, and I saw less and less clients for therapy. And in the end, just gave up my therapy practice because I was renting a room and was hardly there in the end. So nice. I went full time with the magic.
Wow, what a change of career. We've got a good friend actually called Lee Glasgow, who's a wedding photographer, but during the pandemic, he transitioned into being a hypnotherapist. So
the only way around.
Yeah. Fascinating. So you mentioned the magic circle, and that's something that I've always not really understood, really. You know, you hear magicians on TV and they talk about the magic circle, and it sounds very secretive and very sort of hush-hush. What do you have to do to, I guess, be accepted by the magic circle?
Yeah, it is quite secretive. A lot of people have heard the name but don't necessarily know what it is. So the Magic Circle is a private members club in London. So it does have a physical headquarters, which is a beautiful building just behind Euston Station.
Okay.
It is actually down an alley. I kid you not. It's not Diagon Alley, but it is down an alley.
Wow.
And the Magic Circle was formed in 1905. By a bunch of magicians, and it's basically one of the largest and oldest magic societies in the world. And inside the building, you have a museum, you have a library, and obviously it's a private members club, so you have a bar. And one of the reasons that it's famous is because you can only gain membership by performing magic, by actually going along and doing an audition. So that's one of the reasons why people realise it's quite hard to kind of get in there. You need to know some magicians and actually perform for them before they let you in.
So you kind of need to be recommended, but then you need to show that you can do proper magic when you're there, really. Wow.
That's right. You need to be nominated by two existing members to be put forward for the membership. Then you get invited for a short interview. And if they're happy with that, they then invite you to audition. And you have to audition for about 10 minutes in front of, well, I did it in front of about 50 people. They're all magicians. It's at the headquarters. There's three people on a panel watching you and marking you. They are very good. They do kind of let you know what they're looking for,
okay,
which is helpful. So they're judging you on performance, your presentation skills, your sleight of hand skills. And I think on the night that I did it in 2012, four of us auditioned, three of us got in, one didn't.
Oh,
I think.
So some people don't make it then. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. There is a sort of a certain standard. You can retake it if right. you want. For me, I did it as a bit of a test at the time to see, you know, am I good enough to actually get in? So it's a bit of a rubber stamp.
Yeah, like a kite mark almost, I guess, really, yeah, to show that you're notified.
Yeah, it was almost a bit of a challenge for myself. But at least if people book a magician that is in the magic circle, they know that they have been tested and put through that process. So I was very, very proud of it, very proud to get my certificate. And it's a beautiful club. They do let muggles in occasionally.
Muggles. I love it.
I think you can actually hire it as a venue. So if you have the Magic Circle online. And also they do, particularly in December, they do Christmas shows, actually, which you can buy tickets for. So it is possible for the public to go in there sometimes, but not on a club night.
No, of course. Of course. So I guess when you're auditioning, they probably know what you're doing because they're magicians as well, but they're judging how good you are at doing it and how plausible, I guess, you are and how credible, whatever
exactly
the right words are.
They know everything. In fairness, they do say, don't worry about trying to fool us because you probably won't.
No.
But I just did my best stuff. I was already performing semi-professionally at the time when I did my audition. So I just really did what I would normally do at a wedding or an event, and thankfully that was good enough.
Fantastic.
On the night.
And did you ever see?
I wouldn't want to do it again. It's nerve wracking.
No, I'm sure. Do you ever see anybody famous there? Any famous magicians or people that we know off the TV or?
Seen Dynamo a couple of times.
Wow.
Seen Dynamo. I was not actually at the headquarters. Mm. I've seen him at the Session Convention, which is a fantastic magic convention. He's very nice, very very successful.
Yeah.
Obviously, brilliant.
Yeah.
King Charles is a member.
Oh, is he? Wow.
He is for the Magic Circle. I didn't see his audition, so I can't qualify his magical skills,
wow,
but he is definitely. Stephen Fry is another famous member.
Is he really? I love Stephen Fry.
Yeah, Stephen Fry absolutely loves magic, you know, very, very intelligent and loves a bit of magic. So I think I'm right in saying they presented his certificate on QI, I think.
Wow. I'm a big fan of QI and a podcast that span out of QI called No Such Thing as a Fish. If you have a chance to listen to it, it's really funny.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
It's really good. No Such Thing as a Fish, yeah. But that's another topic. We'll come back to that off air, shall we say. But let's come back to the world of weddings, because that's obviously what we kind of talk about on this podcast most of the time. So we've had a number of weddings where there's been a magician there. And from our point of view as candid documentary-style wedding photographers, we love it when there's a magician because there's always something to photograph, you know, and we're looking for people's reactions to the magician, really. But from the perspective of a bride and groom, you know, potentially listening to this podcast, thinking about booking a magician, why is a magician a good idea? Why should they book a magician for their wedding day?
It's fair to say that weddings in the UK are pretty long days, especially if you're not directly involved. So obviously the bride and groom are very busy. You're the couple. You're busy with photographs. You're talking to people all day, all night. So the day will absolutely fly by for you.
Yeah.
But imagine, Steve, if someone's getting married at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, reception 1:30, you're going to be going right through as a guest until, say, midnight.
Mm.
And it's important, I think, to have something for the guests to do or to entertain them, whether that's music, obviously, at the drinks reception or something. It doesn't have to be magic, but some kind of entertainment.
Mm.
If a guest is not involved directly, so they're not a bridesmaid or an usher, that they're a wedding guest, there can be a lot of waiting around.
Yeah, for sure.
Even when I've worked with some brilliant photographers like you guys, who are very quick at taking photographs and don't mess around. There's still a lot of waiting for the other guests. They're stood there with a drink. So I think it's important for brides and grooms to think about the guests that don't have a lot to do, right, and to question whether entertainment is worth adding to their budget. It is an extra. I appreciate that as a supplier.
Yeah,
when booking, you know, it's not a photographer that's absolutely necessary, or a venue, or obviously a wedding dress. It is an extra, but people never regret it. They always, you know, feel fantastic afterwards. They get some great photos for reactions. Yeah. So my job is to really stop the guests getting bored, give the photographers something else to capture, some great reactions, some great moments. And close-up walk-around magic is just brilliant entertainment for a wedding. It really slots in easily to different time periods during the day. It's very flexible, so I can work indoors, outdoors. There's no setup. I've got everything in my pockets. So it's a very sort of modular form of entertainment. I can fit in with any venue, any crowd. And, you know, a really good magician can bring some... you know, real buzz to a wedding, and hopefully some of the photographs and videos on my Instagram and social media testify.
To that. There's some great photos.
You know, people are always glad that they booked entertainment. It's one of those things. It's an extra, but people never regret spending that little bit of extra money to have something there on the day.
I totally agree. We've had the weddings we've had so far this year have all been early weddings. They've been 12 o'clock, 12:30 weddings. And okay, we're not in the height of summer yet, but it's still kind of a long day, as you say, really. And you know, we don't spend hours doing group photos. It's not what we're about. You know, we do the minimum that we're expected to do, really. So we're not bossing people around for hours. So there's people are kind of standing around a little bit, and you can't drink all day. Well, you can, but there's consequences of that, I guess. So, you know, it's how do you, you know, how do you keep your guests entertained, really? Because I think you do, as a couple, have, I think obligation is too strong a word, but I think you do have there's expectation that there's something for them to do, really. You've invited all these people to your wedding, you know, give them something to do.
For me, it's all about fun. Making sure, literally making sure that every single person has a good time.
Completely.
Magic, particularly for the drinks reception, is a good icebreaker.
Yeah.
So if I know couples that are stood there on their own, perhaps they know the bride and groom, but they don't know the other guests. So quite often couples will just stand there with a drink. They're not talking to anyone. So I will go over to them and actually create a little group to perform in front of.
Wow.
So as an icebreaker, it gives people something to talk about when I've left that group. I'll probably spend 10 minutes with a group, 15 minutes maybe, tops. That's something to think about, how to bring your guests together. So even if it's not magic, I would definitely consider some kind of entertainment at some point in your day, particularly if you've got a quiet period.
Yeah.
Because as the bride and groom, you will not notice those times. You will be so busy talking to people, having fun yourself, doing a couple shots, going for the golden hour, which is really important. But think about the guests that perhaps don't know anyone and have something for them. Yeah,
fantastic. Now, we haven't worked together yet, although hopefully we will do in the near future. But when we have worked at weddings where there's been a magician, I've noticed they do exactly what you describe, really. They don't kind of announce themselves and say, "Hey, guys, I'm the magician." You know, they sort of just... perhaps you don't even realise they're there until you start seeing the reaction of people's to the trick, really. People laughing and going, "How did you do that?" And you suddenly realise there is a magician working.
It's not a stage show.
No, it's mingle.
Whether it's daytime or evening, it's walk around, what we call walk around close up magic. Sure. So it's mix and mingle. Everything's in my pockets, and I can perform to people sat at a table or standing groups. So for me personally, every magician is slightly different, but for me personally, I tend to recommend one of two time slots. That's either the drinks reception, which is a perfect icebreaker with magic, or the other good time is after the meal, that early evening kind of lull, Steve. Yeah. You know, that that weird couple of hours when no one really knows what to do.
No, it will.
And yeah, perhaps the first dance hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So that's another good time to consider having something happening for the guests. Yeah. And it's good fun. See some of the evening guests as well.
Yeah,
so yeah, true. So quite often I'll do two weddings in a day, you see. So I'll do
A drink
of one. Wow. I'll go to the house for the evening, yeah.
Oh, of course. I never thought about that. Yeah, of course that would work, wouldn't it? And is it just cards or do you have other sort of props, if that's the right word, as well, or is it mainly cards?
Well, I specialise in cards,
okay.
So that's why you will see on my social media a lot of photos to do with cards, and also they're very sort of visually great for photographs and things like that. People understand card magic, and it's good fun. But no, I do have other props. I do pickpocketing, metal bending, mind reading.
Wow.
When I do stage stuff, I will do more mind reading entertainment. So there is variety. So no, it's not just cards. And okay. That's really important to say. Mm. There's plenty of variety. Rope tricks I've really got into recently.
Wow.
Very visual, especially for a table. I've got other small props. So it's anything with small props, coins, sure. Ropes, money, making things disappear, reappear sure. Somewhere else, impossible. So I borrow items like banknotes and things or ties, blokes if I'm pickpocketing, or watches, wallets. But I give everything back. Don't worry.
Oh, no, I'm sure you do. And as you say, you know, because the way you work is not as if you've got to roll up with a big transit van full of gear. You could effectively perform at any location, any venue, any kind of setting for a wedding, really, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I say it's so flexible, fits in. I literally walk in with a small bag with all my close-up magic bits and pieces in it, like a briefcase. It's actually a makeup bag.
Which is it really?
Yeah, it is, yeah. The makeup bag, which I found to be the best thing to store all of my bits and pieces in, some extra decks of cards and Sharpies and all the stuff that magicians use. So, you know, that's why it's great. It fits in. There's no setup. I need 5 minutes to put things in my pockets and I'm ready to go.
Fantastic.
So that's nice. And sometimes the band and the DJ with all their van full of kit, you know, they're looking at me strolling out thinking, oh, I wish I'd become a magician because they got less kit.
I love it. We try and go minimalist as photographers, but the bags are starting to spread with gear, so we've got to cut that down.
Yeah, I mean, if I could even get rid of the bag, I probably would.
Yeah, me too.
Just walk, but I do need spare stuff just in case.
Of course.
Have
you ever had an unusual request or anybody say, could you do a trick on this or anything that you sort of... something specific they wanted?
I've had some weird things, weird but fun. I remember Bartlett Castle,
okay.
A medieval wedding where they had a medieval banquet, which obviously suited the castle perfectly.
Wow.
Bartlett Castle is one of my favourite venues. Mm. I'm there quite a lot. Got lots of venues around here that I really enjoy performing at.
Sure.
Pippa at Bartlett Castle is fantastic. But she will remember as well that there was this medieval wedding and they asked me to dress up as a wizard. Literally, they hired costumes for every single guest. So I don't know how much money they spent on costumes, but that was fantastic. And I've never performed actually as a wizard before. It was quite hot in the costume.
I bet. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, that was unusual. And literally, they had a medieval banquet, you know, with the bread and the...
The jugs and the mead sort of, and the wood, big sticks of chicken. And yeah, wow.
That was fantastic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Would have looked, you know, amazing with the photos. What made me laugh was that they had a Roman centurion as well.
Right.
So I'm not sure he was in the right time period.
No.
But yeah, so that was one that really sort of sticks out in the mind. But, I mean, most of the weddings... fairly straightforward,
sure.
You know, no mad requests yet.
Yet. Somebody listening to this might challenge you in the next year or so, but who knows. And without giving anything away, of course, but do you have a particular favourite trick or one that you're, you know, one you'd like to perform at every wedding if you could?
Yes. I tend to borrow a banknote and vanish it and make it reappear somewhere else, which is great. They always say as magicians, if you can do magic with borrowed items, then it goes down really, really well because people know, you know, it's something that you just borrowed off them. So perhaps I'll get them to lend me a note. It is becoming increasingly difficult as a cashless society.
Of course.
Sometimes I have to put my thinking cap on. But yeah, there's a few tricks with banknotes that go down very well. One magician, when I started out, gave me a bit of advice, which is true. He said, if you do tricks with fire or people's money, you will always have their attention.
I bet.
But if I borrow a £20 note off a spectator, I know at least one person is going to be watching because they want their note back. But yeah, that's so money tricks are always good. Yeah. Card tricks. I will do anything to get a reaction and get that laugh.
Sure.
Sometimes it's people even remember you for the jokes, you know, the entertainment, not just the magic itself, but making everyone laugh, taking the mickey out of some of the guests. So the banter is just as fun as the magic. Often.
Absolutely. And when we met at the Guides Brides event the other week, you were sort of roped into helping presenting awards for all the raffle prizes and things. And I was very impressed, actually, with your ability to sort of like host an event. And we were saying before we started recording, actually, you're looking to do more kind of event work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that I've always wanted to transition into. And I think there's a natural progression for close-up magicians to then go into stage magic, which is actually very difficult.
Right.
Translating walk-around close-up magic into a solid, say, 15-20 minute act on stage, it is actually quite a challenge.
I'm sure.
And anybody that does stage magic will know how much work and effort and time goes into it. Even to just perform for 10 minutes on stage on your own is not an easy thing to do, because you've got a lot of different challenges, like, can everyone see you? What's the sound system like? But hosting is a natural progression. I'm used to being in front of people presenting. And corporate events need hosts. They need MCs, someone to take control. And I think a lot of people are very wary of public speaking.
Yeah.
Perhaps they work for the company, but now they're roped in to present the awards or something. And I'm saying to people, so I have a whole page on my website about hosting and MC work and things like that. And I just say, rather than a staff member do it, hire a professional, someone that's used to presenting, used to using a microphone, liaising with the AV crew, good with guests, good with banter. So even though when we did it, there were 197 people, which is a big event.
It was.
To be fair.
Yeah.
But to me, the banter is the same. It's a group of people. Yeah. Yes, there's a lot of them, but I love it just as much as when I'm performing walk-around magic. So, yeah, if there's anyone listening that wants hosting or MC work, and I can do that with magic or without, so I can do some warm-up magic on stage. I didn't at that event, but I can do. Get a couple of spectators on the stage or the CEO or something. Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's a totally sort of unique thing to do, being a presenter, being an MC. But I really enjoy it. Some people hate being on stage, but I really love it.
And you're very natural doing it as well, Richard. I've done a bit of that and I enjoy it as well, but not a lot of people don't, for sure. And having that sort of confidence but also controlled personality, I think, is so important, really. And you make a great point, rather than asking the boss to do it for the company and he's not enjoyed himself for the night, get a professional in to do it who can take care of the whole thing for you, really.
I think get someone that's used to doing it, that is their normal day job. I do, you know, magic and presenting full time. I don't do anything else. This is my entire career. So rather than have somebody on stage that is very nervous, don't put them through that. We know how to write scripts. We know how to edit scripts. So I can liaise with the company. I'll be there early on the day to talk to the AV crew, like for the Guides for Brides awards night. We were there very early, weren't we?
We were.
I've been seeing everything. So, yeah, so if they have the budget for it, it's always worth getting the professionals in.
Absolutely.
Because these situations aren't frightening for them. They're used to it. They enjoy it. So I always feel sorry for people that are put up to present things when they don't really want to or they don't feel comfortable. Not everyone likes being the centre of attention or being in front of people, and you know, it shouldn't be forced upon people if they don't want to do it.
No, completely. As my wife would tell you, I love it, but that's another story. So you call yourself the Gloucestershire magician. Does that mean you only work in Gloucestershire, or you travel further afield from that?
So, yeah, so Gloucestershire Magician Limited is my trading name.
Okay.
Really, that's just me. And I live in Gloucester, travel all around Gloucestershire and the Cotswolds. So most of the venues around here know me pretty well.
Yeah,
I've been doing this for 16 years now.
Wow.
So I'm very lucky to have good relationships with a lot of the venues. We've got some fantastic venues in Gloucestershire.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm sure you know many of them as
we
well.
Do. Yeah, we do.
And obviously where you're based. So I suppose my main regions would be Gloucestershire, South West, Midlands, and London, where I do corporate work.
Okay.
The corporate work is often in the cities.
Yeah.
I can travel anywhere. Last year, I did a fantastic wedding in Jersey, so I was flown out there to perform it, which is lovely. Mm. I've worked in Spain and Italy. So despite the domain name, I can travel, mm-hmm. But obviously that's factored into the cost.
Of course.
Probably 60-70% of my work is in the southwest and London, and then obviously, you know, further afield if people want me to travel. I'm very happy to travel if people want me to.
Okay, great stuff. So it's been great finding out more about the world of magic and finding out a bit more about yourself, Richard. Where can the listener find out more about you specifically? Where is the best place for people to go?
The most active place that I'm on is Instagram. I do have Twitter, but I tend to be on Instagram the most. So people can direct message me on there. My Instagram is @GlossMagician, GLOS Magician, @GlossMagician. Or my website has all of the information on there. My website is GloucestershireMagician.co.uk. And people can email me or get in touch with me. I do have Facebook as well. Just search for Gloucestershire Magician on Facebook. So any of those formats, email. But Instagram is my busiest social media, I think, rather than Twitter. And I tend to get a lot of inquiries through Instagram, actually, a lot of direct messages every day.
Good.
I think a lot of couples look for inspiration on Instagram, don't they? It's quite a visual platform, great for photographers.
Yes, that's where we get many of our inquiries as well. So we will put all those handles on our show notes, so everybody who perhaps didn't quite catch that can pick it up off the show notes as well, Richard. So
thank you.
It's been great getting to know you today. Hope to see you at a wedding for real sometime in the near future.
Yeah.
In the meantime, have a great season, and look forward to speaking to you soon, Richard.
You too, and thank you very much for having me, and can't wait to work with you again.
So, Richard, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It was great to find out about the world of magic and the magic circle. Fascinating to learn what you have to do to become a professional musician, and really looking forward to hopefully working with you in the near future at a wedding. And if you are a bride and groom listening to this podcast and you are thinking of booking some entertainment, we'd highly recommend a magician.
We would. We've had magicians at a few weddings before now. And they've been really good entertainment, really.
Well, it does, as Richard said on his on the interview, really. There's always that sort of lull between, you know, having the ceremony, possibly doing some group photos, and there's a little bit of a lull. And there's also that lull after the dinner, before like the evening guests arrive, particularly in an early wedding like we've had recently. We've had a couple of weddings that have been like 12:30 starts. And I think he makes a really good point, really, about, I don't think it's your responsibility, but I think it's a good idea if you're a bride and groom at a wedding to think about what your guests are going to be doing and how you're going to entertain them, really.
Yeah, because otherwise it just gets to be like what do we do now for a couple of hours? You know, they just sit and talk, and it can be a bit long-winded.
Yeah, and, you know, you might be waiting sort of 2-3 hours before you eat again, really. So, and you can't drink all the time. Hopefully not, anyway.
Well, I'm sure some do.
Yeah, some do. So having a band, and you know, we've had chats with bands before now, but people like our friend Dave from Ear Candy, they'd be great because he does a solo set, he does a duo, and he does a full band as well, doesn't he?
Mm.
But a magician, I think, is great because they can sort of mingle amongst the guests, and often you don't realise they're there until people start laughing or making gasps of astonishment and all that stuff.
Yeah, we've had a few magicians at weddings we've done, haven't we? And it's been quite nice to actually see the way they go around the tables and just kind of start talking to people and doing a few card tricks and then do something else. And
yeah,
it's quite nice.
And from our point of view, there's always someone to photograph when there's a magician working, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
So we've done, what, 2 weddings so far this year? We've got another one coming up tomorrow. So we're recording this on the Friday evening. And both have been early starts. So there have been 12:30 weddings up till now. And just some thoughts, really, on the sort of the whole wedding photography requirements, really, for couples, really. And we really want to remind couples of the importance, really, of getting a list together of any formal pictures that you want. Because whilst we're very happy not to do any, as documentary wedding photographers, often couples will, of course, want, you know, a dozen group pictures or so. But I think not so much these weddings so far, but generally over the last few years, couples do tend to underestimate how long they can take.
Yeah. And I think couples find themselves under pressure by family members to take photos that they wouldn't necessarily have thought about, which adds to the list.
Yeah.
And we always say, you know, if a group of people want a photo that isn't included in the group list, then all they need to do is come up and actually speak to us and ask us.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're more than happy to do that. Because the trouble is, the only time people seem to get together is for weddings and funerals.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about the latter. I've had too many
It's people want to have that. That's a very rare opportunity to get family members together.
No, and it's important. And, you know, we're very, very happy to do formal group pictures. You know, we'll do as many as the couple wants within reason. But we find couples underestimate how long they take because, you know, you've got to get, well, you'll get the dress sorted, the groom, make sure his buttonhole's not wilting and phone isn't bulging out of his pocket, all that kind of stuff. And then get everybody arranged and thinking about what they're going to do with their hands. And then I always take at least 8 or 10 pictures of every group because somebody always blinks at the wrong time.
Probably more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people, like me, actually seem to be very good at blinking at the wrong time. So when we do all that, it's probably 3 or 4 minutes a group, really.
And sometimes even more than that.
Yeah, especially if you've got a venue where people can wander off, go and have a pint, check in if it's a hotel. Yeah. And what we always try and do, if the couple do want like one big group picture or if not every photo of everybody, like a big group, we always kind of start with that and lose people rather than try to find people.
You always tend to find as well because family members only get together for something like a wedding or a funeral. They haven't seen each other for a while and they're trying to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they start talking and they get into their own little bubble with whoever they're talking to.
And that's really important and they should do.
But regardless of that, people trying to shout them, they're not going to hear.
No.
They need somebody who knows who they are, who can actually physically go up to them and say, we need you for a photo.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're in their little bubble and they're not really listening to what's going on around them.
Yeah. So we always ask our couples to give us a list of the people that they want because what we don't want to do, and we've never had touch wood, but what we don't want to have is an important family member contacting the bride and say, you didn't take a photo of me with you two after the wedding because we can't go back and do it afterwards. And we don't know the family dynamics. Obviously, in this day and age, lots of families have, you know, remarried, parents have remarried, or uncles and aunties or whatever have remarried. You know, that happens all the time. We're examples of that, aren't we? Mm. So we don't know the family units. And what we don't want to do is to find out, oh, I really wish you'd had a picture taken with my Auntie Flo or, dare I say, my granny or something. So if you are thinking about your wedding and your wedding photography, whether you've booked us or somebody else, really do think about what groups you want. But I'd also encourage you to think about, do you really need that group with these particular people? Because if it's going to take 4 minutes a group, 10 groups is 40 minutes.
Yes, it soon mounts up.
And that's a lot of time to be spent lining up with a grin on your face when perhaps you'd rather be mingling with people and chatting and have a bit of a laugh. So, am I overplaying that or is that a...
No.
You sure?
Yep. No, I agree entirely.
And, you know, the timing of them as well, what we always try and do is not get straight into group photos. Let's say it's a venue where the service is taken or ceremony is taking place at the same place as they're going to eat. What we don't want to do is get straight into doing group photos as soon as the ceremony is over.
Well, that would be impossible because everybody will want to be congratulating the couple for having just got married. And of course, they've not
especially
seen the bride.
Especially the bride, they haven't seen the bride,
have they? Yeah. I was just about to say that.
Sorry.
So you need to give them time to mingle and just say hi to the people that they've not had a chance to speak to. People can congratulate them and then get into the photos. But as we've said, you know, if group members of family would like a photo that they just want for them, we're more than happy to do it if they just kind of say, would you mind just taking this photo?
Yeah, what we won't do is sort of grab couples and say, oh, you look amazing, go and stand over there. I don't think we will anyway. But if couples come up to us and say, oh, could you take our photo, then of course we would do, wouldn't we?
Because the thing is, when the bride and groom are speaking to their guests, we're going into incognito mode, as you call it.
Yeah. Cloak of invisibility.
Well, not really.
I wish.
But we're mingling and we're photographing what's going on. So we're photographing people hugging each other, congratulating each other, just generally milling and speaking to each other.
I also call it the hugathon.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. I'll drop that idea then.
So it's just like generally what's happening, the melee and just people just generally chatting and catching up with each other.
Yeah, drinks and nibbles time.
Yeah.
When they have a hookathon.
But not with them shoving food in their face.
Not ideally, no. And another thing that's pertinent, looking at our window right now on a Friday evening where it's peeing it down, is we found a few bride and grooms really worrying about what's going to happen on the weather on the day if it rains. Now, we can control many things. I have lots of things in my power, but control of meteorology
is not one of them.
It's not one of them.
It's definitely not one of them.
If it was, I wouldn't be doing this job. So it's what it is, guys, really. If it does rain...
That's what it is.
Yeah.
We work with it. You work with it.
It's a bit of a bummer, but there's ways around it, really, aren't there? You know, if it comes to formal pictures, then we'll take them inside. Or we'll wait until it's a bit of looking at the forecast. We've got really good phone apps with weather forecasts, don't we? But if it just pee down all day, then, you know, we can make a feature of Brolly's. There's that picture of you on our Instagram account.
Okay.
You looking like a drowned rat.
Literally.
With a brolly over the bride in somewhere in Oxford, wasn't it? Was it a couple of years ago?
Yeah. And my dress literally stuck to my legs because I was so wet.
Yeah, you did look very wet. Like incredibly wet. It looked like you just come out of a...
Well, I couldn't put my hood up. That was the problem. Because if I had my hood up, I couldn't see where I was going because it came down over my face so far. I was holding the side of the dress with one hand, the back of the dress with my other hand. She was holding the other side of the dress with her hand, but then also holding the brolly with her other hand. So everything water-wise coming off the brolly was going directly onto me. And she was, but that was fine because she was perfectly dry.
Well, she's dried.
At the end of the day, that was fine.
Yeah.
But I can remember getting to the reception venue afterwards because we got back to the car and my dress was literally stuck to my legs. I was so wet.
You look like a scuba diver.
Thanks. So we get to the reception venue and they had a roaring fire in the reception. And I think I stood in front of that fire and just shivered and shook for about 10 minutes while I tried to dry off in
this
front of the
fire. This was a July
fire.
Wedding as well, from memory, wasn't it? It was a summer wedding. It wasn't February or something, wasn't it? But in all seriousness, the rain, you know, will come not May, whether we try and anticipate it or not, really. So we can just work around
actually,
it.
And actually, can I just add as well, as we were walking through Oxford to get to the Oxford camera where we were going to do these few photos, I would say every other couple was saying, it is good luck for it to rain on your wedding day.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I'm sure she was walking along thinking, no, it's not.
No, she was quite fine. And rightly so, it was her big day and nothing was going to spoil it. But from our point of view, you know, we always bring a couple of fairly cheap Amazon brollies, white brollies, so we can do flash type photos with rain and stuff, can't
we? We need to get some more of because they broke.
They broke, don't they? Because they were cheap. 10 quid jobbies of Amazon. But if I buy good ones, I always leave them there. I've lost God knows how many golf brollies at venues over the last few years. So we'll get a couple of more bog standard. We do have the flash brollies as well, which we can use at a push. But they're probably not good at keeping the rain out, but they're good for the flash photos, but it's what it is, really. It's what it is.
We work with whatever we've got.
Yeah. So, And let's just hope over the next few weeks the weather's going to pick up, because it has been a dreadful run over April. It's been literally peeing it down nearly every day.
It's supposed to get better this week.
We can guarantee mid-May it's going to get worse because we're going on holiday.
No, it's not.
We're going to Scotland, so come on.
No, it's
May
not.
In Scotland is going to rain, isn't it?
No, it's not.
I admire your
no,
optimism.
No, it's not.
I admire your optimism. But then we get
and your negativity.
My realism. And then we get super busy in June and July. And then we've actually got a quiet August for once this year, which is quite nice.
I know. I can actually get to celebrate my birthday.
We can. We go to a festival, aren't we?
Which is on a Saturday.
We go to a festival.
We are.
We're going to the Long Road Festival, which is a country music festival in
Lutterworth.
Lutterworth, thank you. And see my favourite band, Blackberry Smoke.
With my brother and his girlfriend.
Are they in Blackberry Smoke?
Shut up. No, dear.
No, I don't think they are they? No, so. Shall we end this nonsense and finish the show for another week? So thanks for your time, everybody. It's been lovely to catch up again. It's been a while since we've done a podcast. We'll try and keep on top of them over the next few weeks, although we are going to get super busy with weddings. Thanks again to Richard for the interview. It was great to meet him and chat with a real-life magician. He didn't make me turn into a frog, you'd be pleased to know.
That might have been a good thing.
You could have kissed me. I could have turned to a prince.
No.
On that note, dear listener, have a great week. And we'll talk to you soon.